podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
I'd like to touch on today what I think is a major issue for us Western people. Dharma, going right back, well, up until the last few years, of course, as we know, has been exclusive property of the East, of the countries of the East. And that's where it started, as we know, and that's where it's developed and where it's been taught, where its roots, where the whole philosophy, if you like, the teachings, the philosophy, the whole thing is very much of an Eastern, an expression of the Eastern mind. And even wherever it's gone in the East, from India, going north and then going further east, it's still nevertheless, it's always touched Eastern cultures. And fundamentally those, they are all different, but there are undercurrents there that unify them. So it's really about just been taking new clothes as it's moved from one country to the next. And it's usually taken a long time for it to bed down into cultures, possibly because of communication. These things always take a long time. Things move very, very slowly historically. But I think there's the undercurrent there, the sort of general social, the general social conditions have been pretty much the same, that the sense of community and stuff that's underpinned all Eastern culture, and I think underpins all countries that don't have a lot of affluence, because it's really a case of coming together and supporting each other. So there's always a big sense of community, and I think that's probably, you know, a major sort of driving force and of what's created that sort of cultures which have been pretty much, I would say, I mean, clearly there are a lot of differences when you get off the ground a little bit, clearly, but I think getting down into the root of the thing, there is that sense of the whole is more important than the individual. And I think that characterizes not just the East, but other parts of the world also. But us Westerners, we've a Western culture is not like that, and hasn't been like that for a long time, since we became affluent. I'm sure a few hundreds of years ago there was probably no different. We had that same sense of community where the whole was more important than the individual. I'm sure that was the case here also, probably only up until the last 200 or 300 years, till we started developing our own. We found ways of rapid wealth through the Industrial Revolution, was when it all kicked off. And we suddenly realised if we changed our pattern of thought and our focus, and began to plan and to think laterally, we could create wealth for ourselves. And that's embedded itself very much in, shall we say, in the West. When we talk about the West, we're talking about industrialized countries that have created this sort of wealth. And consequently, it's changed us on a more fundamental level. And as I say, the Dharma was nurtured, was matured in that Eastern, with that Eastern mind, with that sense of community, of collectiveness, of doing things in that way, not so much focusing on the individual. And consequently, their mindset was very different, clearly very different. And you go to the East today, even though they are rapidly catching us up, their mindset is still radically different than ours. I suspect the very wealthy people in the East, I suspect their mindset and our mindset are rapidly merging. But as a generalisation, it's still very much that sort of spirit is different. And so the Dharma comes from the East to the West. And we want to, obviously we want to copy it. And I think one of our major impediments with that is that it does come with Eastern cultures. The Dharma doesn't come in its nakedness, as it were, because the Dharma in its nakedness actually doesn't belong to anybody. It doesn't belong to any culture. It doesn't belong to any. It's the law of nature, which transcends the human condition and the human way of constructing things. It is a neutral law that has been taken from one country to another. And as it beds into the country, it takes on the culture of that country, and then it begins to have its own specific identity, and also take on nuances that are useful and that work in that culture, but don't work in another culture because the cultures are different. They've developed differently over the thousands of years, I suppose. But underneath it, there is the law that the Buddha discovered. It's the law of nature, and we are out of sync with that law. We've estranged ourselves from that law. We don't live by that law. We've come disconnected from it, and he discovered a way back into reconnecting with what is a universal, a neutral law that didn't belong to India, but discovered something that the culture has been built on top of and has thrown its covers over to make it a particular identity. But that law is universal. And so it comes to the West with the clothes of the East. And we are confronted with, we are, the thing that very much characterizes Western people coming to the Dharma is that we come to it because we want it. We're not born into it. It's not something that's a part of our culture that we just follow because that's what you do. We actually come from a different direction altogether, and we've rejected that, and we're stepping into it because we believe it's something that's going to work for us, that we think is something that's more real for us. And so we are really seriously going to it. We're not just going along with how it is, how our culture takes us. And so, therefore, we are very serious. We really want the Eightfold Path. And actually, that's very unusual in the scheme of things. Buddhism's been around for 2,500 years, but for most people, not of this culture, the Eightfold Path is not something that many people have really wanted to embrace. It's become a cultural thing, picking and choosing, and what motivated the Buddha, and what the Buddha discovered, and how he discovered it, i.e. he stopped and he faced up to himself and he looked into himself and he discovered how he was constructed and what was going on within him. Most people are not prepared to do that. You can go along with the cultural extremities. But in order to get to know yourself, you would have to practice the Eightfold Path in whatever shade it may, however it may be slightly shaded within the culture. That Eightfold Path has to be followed, otherwise it's not the Buddha's way. And for most people in the East, that's not been, they've not had that desire, that drive to do that. It's, as I say, it's a cultural thing. You're born into it and that's what you do. But for us, we're serious. We want the Eightfold Path. We want the whole business. We're not interested in just a bit of it. We're not content to have a bit of it. Most of us, I would say definitely most of us, not all of us, but most of us, we're not content with a little bit of it. We want the whole package. For us, it's very serious. And we're prepared to give it a go. And that's, as I say, that's unusual. Don't imagine that Buddhism is, that's the way of Buddhism in the East. You may get that impression when you read books. But when you go out there, you will see that the people who do what we do are actually very few. It's a very, very tiny percentage that are interested in the whole of the path, the whole of the Eightfold Path. So when it comes to us, as I say, we are seriously embracing the whole thing. And the nature of it is it is very subtle, and it's something that has to be got right. You can't, from my understanding of it, it is actually, that path actually, to get it right, is quite a narrow path. It doesn't have a lot of compromise. And when we come to the path, we do, because we don't know it, obviously, it's something totally alien to our culture, most of it, maybe not the ethical side, but certainly the insightful aspect of it is alien to our culture, the philosophy. You know, obviously we are pretty much all over the place, but slowly we learn to grow into it, grow into that new way of looking at things. And I believe that the more you get to understand it and the subtleties of it, the path becomes narrower and narrower. You realise that actually this is quite an exact process. It is not a process full of infinite compromises, because the path of wisdom is something very precise. And so we got to get it right. We don't have a lot of leeway with it. If we were not concerned with the whole of the path, then you got lots of space. But when you really want it, when you want to know yourself and get to that point where you wake up to yourself, that becomes narrower and narrower and narrower. And the difficulty that us people in the West have, I would say, we have a different mindset. We have a different makeup. We take on the Eastern ways. We can't do anything else, because that's how it's presented to us. And then try to follow exactly how the Eastern way, how the Easterners do it. Try to replicate it. And I think that becomes very questionable, because it's missing a component, it's missing an aspect, it's missing a feature that is very big with us, that you could say almost that it doesn't exist in the East. And that's this very big self-identity that we have, this sense of being an individual that we've been taught in our culture from birth, to have this strong sense of an individual, of being an individual, not being connected in that way, but a sense of developing this strong sense of self, strong sense of ego. And it works. It works in our culture. In fact, you could say without that, you're not really going to be that successful in our culture. Materially, you won't be. You might be happy, but happiness is to be, to have the education and to get that way of being, so that you can launch yourself into this material world, into this competitive material world, and to be successful, you've got to have a strong sense of self so that you can compete and look after and get what you want. And that sense of self, in the scheme of things, is unique. It's unique to us. The Eastern people with their growing wealth, and they no doubt will soon climb aboard. But as it is, historically in Buddhism, it was simply never there. We have this massive sense of self that if you read the scriptures, I don't even know that you would even get any mention of it. And what that strong sense of self, one of the byproducts of that strong, because we are so, we have invested our whole experience of life into that separate me thing that we created, that it becomes something very big and something heavy for us. And that carries a lot of dangers. Not something light that's dispersed. Everybody's got a sense of separation and a sense of themselves, but it comes in degrees, and we've been encouraged to develop a really, really strong sense of me, so that we become even more disconnected than what the dualistic experience we have will give us anyway, but it's even more so that way for us. And so we become very much wrapped up in ourselves, that we take ourselves very seriously, that this thing is so precious to us that we have to defend it at all costs because we have nothing else. This becomes the be-all and the end-all of our experience of life, and so we have to protect it. And within that is all of our history, all of our karma, all of that stuff. Just the whole infinite mishmash of all sorts of experiences and just the whole experience of life within that, and how we relate to life. And consequently, it's very easy to get into a lot of conflict with that. What it then is a conflict with ourselves. And that conflict that we have is that we end up, we don't like ourselves. And that is a very strong characteristic of Western people, is that we don't like ourselves. Now, for Eastern people, that is just not on the radar. And I doubt, not that I'm particularly well read with the scriptures, of any description, I very much doubt whether you'll read very much about that subject of not liking yourself. Because I doubt whether it's ever actually ever been anything significant, anything that's been in the environment of Dharma practice, that's been anything of any great significance historically. And yet for us, I would say it's the biggest thing. It's our relationship with ourselves is our biggest impediment. Because the Dharma and the fulfillment of the Dharma, the understanding and the liberation, whatever, awakening, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, is that becomes a possibility when you get to know yourself. It isn't an external event. It isn't something that happens through any other circumstance other than getting to know yourself, getting to know who you are, how you're constructed, how you're caught, how you create, And it's learning to see, to understand, and to let go of all of that. And when you let go, the clarity of reality will reveal itself. You don't create reality, but you break out of the dream, out of the prison of this self thing that divorces you from that seeing that truth. So the whole path from beginning to end, despite how you can so easily misunderstand the scriptures with the way that they're described, is actually it isn't something inconceivable to understand. What it is that you need to get to know yourself. And when you truly get to know yourself, then that whole dualistic world that you've created, that sense of separation and your non-understanding of reality, that will all fall away, and your non-understanding of reality will fall away to reveal what is the truth. Then you'll be free. And that's called awakening. And you arrive at that event by getting to know yourself in the round. And the whole journey, if that's how you describe it, the whole journey to that event is nothing more than waking up to yourself. So it's not out there, and it's not these wonderful, the imagery that can often be created around this training. It actually, if you like, is actually a very mundane event, is that you actually get to know yourself. That's all it is. So you don't have to turn it into some exotic, inconceivable journey. As so often, it's very easy to fall into that because of the imagery and the things that are presented to us, that we can actually forget that actually what this is all about is waking up to ourselves. That's all it is. Not a very attractive proposition, not a very good selling point, actually. If you want to sell this to anybody, you don't actually use that language. You use lots of lovely other stuff that somehow can actually miss the point completely. That these things that people talk about are not actually going to be your experience until you get to know yourself. So this is not the small thing. This is a big thing, and yet it's not in Eastern Buddhism. It's not in the thing that we have picked up, we've gone to and we've picked up. It's not there. Learn to like yourself, or you don't like yourself. And yet it's the most fundamental. And it seems, from my observations, that when Westerners have decided, as quite naturally it's going to happen, that they're going to westernize Eastern Buddhism and slowly let go of the Eastern cultures, and so that we find our own identity, as ultimately what has to be exactly the same as it has done in the East. You don't go to China and see that they practice the way that people in Sri Lanka practice. I mean, it doesn't happen. Is that it has to find its own identity within the culture that it goes to. And that's, we are a part of that transition, and it's not, certainly not made it yet, but we are a part of it, that we are holding on to the Eastern mind, and somehow trying to replicate the Eastern mind within our own mind. And that process of change is going to take time, exactly the same way as it's changed when it's gone from one culture to another in the East. Hundreds of years, usually. But I suspect with our communication these days, we can cut quite a lot of corners. But it's still, I think it's not just simply communication. There's huge amounts of psychology involved with all of this, and just the way that things have got to shift, is going to take a long time, and I doubt whether it's going to happen in our lifetimes. But nevertheless, we are part of that process, and a slow letting go of a mentality that doesn't fit our mentality. Even though paradoxically we are human beings, we have so many similarities. This is why it's not a black and white thing. If it's black and white, it wouldn't be a discussion. But because it's very subtle, it's something that's going to take an awful long time to evolve. But nevertheless, Western people are diving in, as Westerners do. They read it, oh no, we don't need to do it like that, we need to do it like this. And so they come up with their own ideas. And you see Western Sanghas who are not associating themselves with the ancient ways of the East, formulating, and in that change they're ejecting bits and they're adding bits on, chucking bits out, in their attempt to Westernize the Dharma. Well, I guess it's an evolutionary thing. That it's just going to have to take its natural course, because at the end of the day, if what they do is not right, it won't last. It's as simple as that. The proof of the pudding. You can convince people of something because you're good at communication and that it's like this, but at the end of it all, if it doesn't work, it will go, it will die. And it's like everything else. You experiment, and when you experiment, you make mistakes. That's how you learn. And then slowly, hopefully, you end up with the right thing at the end. And we're in that process. And I get I see a lot of this just observing and seeing what people eject, what Westerners eject, and how they fashion things. I don't feel comfortable, because for me they're compromising the Dharma. They are, and very clear, just my view, if you like, what else is it, is that they end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That's the great danger when you start fiddling with something that's actually worked for thousands of years and shown to work, and it wouldn't be here today if it didn't work. So clearly it does work. And then you get the old maxim, you know, if it works, don't fix it. But that's not good enough for Western people, because we always like to tinker. We always like to think we can improve, and what we do is better. And we do it all in the name of Western Buddhism, that we are putting our own identity. And it's a very dangerous, dodgy path. Myself, I am very much a traditionist. I think we have to be very careful about ejecting things that have been established for hundreds, possibly thousands of years, that work. And I'm personally very, very wary of starting to tinker with the structure. It seems like almost for the sake of tinkering with it, because I want to put my mark on it, therefore I've got to change it in order to create my own identity. We can't accept somebody else's thing. I've got to leave my mark, which is a very Western thing. This all comes from this ego thing. And the Dharma, as I say, the Dharma is universal. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's the natural law of things, and we've got to find that natural law. And whatever we do, is that we don't tinker with it. We don't start dismantling it, because if we do, it ain't going to work. It's not going to get you through that final breakthrough, which is where it will take you if you get it right. And if you don't get it right, it will not take you. It may approximate you along the way, but the proof of the pudding is that breakthrough. And what Westerners have got to do when they tinker with the Dharma, when they decide to change it because we're Westerners and we're different, is that the only way that they are going to authenticate their new way of doing things is by having a breakthrough, that breakthrough which authenticates their path. And until that happens, it's not authenticated. It's in doubt. Has what's changed not ending up, you end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater in your efforts to westernize it. And I think that happens. And that's experiment. And when it doesn't work, it will fall away. And then maybe somebody will come along who will actually see that whatever you do, however you un-Easternize it, in your efforts to un-Easternize it, you then don't start throwing components of the Dharma out with that ejection of the East. So in other words, you've got to know the Dharma. You've got to know the Dharma beyond the outer clothing, the culture, and all the bells and whistles that are thrown over the Dharma. Whoever's gonna westernize this by throwing the clothing away has got to know the difference between the clothing and the Dharma, because they are different. Oh yes, the culture, the Dharma doesn't belong to the culture. The Dharma is a universal law that is ever present in this moment, through all cultures, through every moment of the day and night, throughout the whole of the world. And it never shifts. It never gets compromised. It can never ever become a possession of anybody, of anybody's. What you do is that you can identify it, focus and know it, trust it, see it, know it, and then what builds around it, what culture builds around it, never compromises that law. And if that law is never compromised, then it's the authentic, then it's the true way that the Buddha discovered. And you follow it, and it will take you to the end of the path. Then it authenticates it. We have to be very careful with that, with this transition that I think is going to transcend our generation, at least. But what we can do, I believe, is so important, and I don't really see it. If there is a difference between the East and the West, of course, never mind the clothing and all the rest of it, the language, that you don't even have to mention that. What is the difference between the East and the West? Is this very powerful sense of self that we got? And this Western characteristic that most of us carry is that we don't like ourselves. And for us, I think, without compromising the Dharma, without fiddling and messing with it in the name of Western Buddhism, I think what we need to do for us is to give a lot of emphasis on the fact that we don't like ourselves. And that's unique. That's never happened in Buddhism. But for us, and that's not compromising the Dharma, that's merely focusing on a major feature of our makeup. What needs to be looked at, what needs to be addressed, what needs to be awakened to, not ignored, and pretend that you can go on this wonderful exotic journey by not bothering about the fact that you don't like yourself. Somehow it's going to fall off on the way, so you don't have to address it. In other words, you don't have to look at yourself. You don't have to address the conflict. Somehow, because that's like, you know, who wants to do that? That's not a nice place to go. So somehow you can ignore that, and we'll just go for this. Oh, enlightenment. Oh, fantastic. And that's the allure. That's what we do. And we tinker around with all these other things, because I'm a Westerner. But that thing there is sitting there, make no mistake. And that thing there that sits there has never been that big and that profound in the history of Buddhism. That's what separates us from the East. Never mind the exterior stuff. That's what separates us, is that we got a massive sense of self, a massive self, sense of a self-identity, of being an individual. That's what our culture is conditioning. There's nothing real about it. There's nothing natural about it. It is pure conditioning that our culture has given us since we were babies. Something has been in place for many generations. And that's what we need to look at, because that is a big, big boulder that's smack in the middle of the path that you cannot ignore if you want to get to the other side. And so we have to look at our relationship with ourselves. And we have to look at the conflict that we have and why we don't like ourselves, and observe it and know it, that we're always beating ourselves up. How so many of us actually hate ourselves. Easterners don't hate themselves. I mean, I'm generalising. Easterners don't hate themselves. They've got their own stuff. They've got their boulder that we don't have. They're very much caught up with their... And I've seen it firsthand. They're so caught by superstition and different beings and different realms and devils and demons and all sorts of stuff. And believe me, they're as real for them as they are as unreal for us. And I've seen impressive practitioners of the Dharma that know a lot about the Dharma that just are so impeded by these experiences that they have. And it's always things are coming to... The devil, in all its many manifestations, are coming to knock me off the path, to stop my progress along the path. I've seen it. I would say that's the stuff that they have to deal with. That's their impediment. Their major impediment. For us, it doesn't exist. We laugh at that sort of stuff. It certainly doesn't impinge on us. It certainly is not something that is an impediment to us and our training and in our meditation sitting there. We don't just wait for the demons to come, or at least thinking that they're something from the outside, as they do. And they've got to somehow engage with them and placate them in some way and find ways of dealing with these, satisfying so they go away and they're not angry with you anymore. And they spend so much time caught up in all of these things. I was in the middle of a big incident like that in a place full of really very, very admirable practitioners. I'm telling you, people who knew how to meditate and had a lot of understanding of the Dharma, but they were still so caught up with these things. And I was sat there in the middle of it going, what? I'm not going there. Don't you dare tell me about it. I'm not interested in these things, because they're not part of my culture. They're not something that's a part of my psyche in any way. But I got something that they don't have. I got this... Ugh. I've got my individuality. That's my devil, my Mara. That's what I have to deal with. They don't. But so, in a sense, you know, we've both got our stuff to work with, but manifest in very different ways. And for us, is that we don't like ourselves because we've got this big thing that sits on our shoulders that we carry. And you can see Western people, even by the way they walk, that they're carrying themselves on their shoulders. Watch an Eastern person walk and watch a Westerner walk. You can even see it in the walk, in the body language. You can see it so clearly when we bow, how an Easterner has absolutely no problem in bowing their head, putting their head on the ground. They will get down and they will flow. And they will just... And then you watch a Westerner do it. There's just there's a resistance there. You can see it. Even though they're really giving themselves to it, there's something there that's still in the way, so that they can't really let themselves go. And you can see, I mean, it's quite comical, actually, sometimes, the way they think that they can do it. And you can see the way they throw themselves on the ground. It is nothing but an ego trip. They are giving nothing away. They're just pretending to be humble. Look at me, I am being humble. Well, I cannot be humble. But that's we are so consumed by this me, this ego that we've got, that we can't even put our heads on the ground. It is such a major event for us. And how many Western people who say they practice the Dharma will have no sense of devotion in their practice, no sense of opening, of giving something away, of bowing their head. Now that's mumbo jumbo. How many Westerners who practice will not bow that? Oh no, I'm not doing that. That's just rubbish. And yet Dharma is nothing more than bowing your head. That's all it is. It's giving this monster up that we've created for ourselves. That's all it is. And when you give that up, you're free. You're in reality. You've awakened. You experience nirvana. The Dharmakaya. It's done. Job done. Finished. Just give me up. That's it. Beginning, the end of the story. There isn't anything else. It's only me. It's only about giving me up. And yet, that's the one thing that we can't do, because it's so massive for us. And we've got to look into that and sort of unpick it, as it were, and do it in a very skillful way and get to know it. And we could see that so much of that me, that I, all of our identity is with I there. And see what a morass, this thing that's just in conflict with itself all the time. It's called duality. Duality means there are opposites. And one side of that opposite requires the other side to exist. If that side no longer exists, that has to fall away. It needs that in order to live. That's the law of duality. You can't have one side without the other. So the way the self exists is that it fights itself. I like you. I don't like you. You're horrible. Oh, no, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Oh. And something rises up there, and there's another side that believes that, that buys into that, the other side of that, so that it feeds. So there is this thing that's going on, this conflict. And it takes conflict to retain duality. And we buy into that big time. So when we don't like ourselves, we're fighting ourselves. We're split in half, one side fighting the other. And all you're doing is reinforcing the very thing that we're meant to be giving up. And somehow you don't want to go there. I want enlightenment. I don't want that. That's really ugly. Oh, God. You can't face looking at yourself, because all you see is conflict, and what you see is that this major component that creates the self is that it doesn't like itself. And that's the legacy of having a big ego, and that's for us Westerners, that's it. That's number one. That's it. And yet somehow, this seems to be sort of not quite on the radar with these people who want to westernize Eastern Buddhism. Somehow this is not quite on the radar. It's not as stark as the way I'm expressing it. It's always, well, we do a little bit, or we do away with hierarchy. We won't have teachers anymore because they're all corrupt anyway. So we do away with those. We won't have any hierarchy anymore. We won't have anybody following anybody else. And we won't bow our heads, because that's just giving in to something, and we'll do away with all of those things, and shore it all down, get rid of all of this stuff, get down to the bare bones, and then we'll just go on this insight path, and we'll just have a look at the body and all the blah, 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 and all that, and we won't bother with all of this stuff. But all of this stuff there that we're rejecting are things that have been put in place that challenge the ego. That's what they're for. That's what they've been put there for. So that we do learn to give up, so that we do learn humility. Oh, I'm humble, I'm not going to be humble. Humility. We don't do humility. Western people don't do humility. It's not on our radar. We don't do that. We do assertiveness. That's what we do. But the spiritual path is about humility. And that, you know, that absolutely challenges me more than anything. Bow the head. Learn to give up. Learn to surrender. No, we don't surrender. That makes you a little wimpy thing. That you've got no. You're just giving away all your power. There's no knowledge of what surrender actually really means in a spiritual sense. But what we need to do as practitioners is to look at our relationship with ourselves. And to see that not only that we do have this big sense of a sense of self, and the bigger the sense of self is, the more estranged you are from what is, the more separate, the more dualistic you become, and the more dualistic you become, the more lonely that you become, the more desolate and separate you feel. That's what the ego does. That's where loneliness comes from. If you didn't have an ego, you would not be lonely. You would be unified. You would be at home. You would be at one with yourself, at one with what is. Instead, we are completely alienate ourselves. And the more we nurture this ego, the more alienated we become. The further we estrange ourselves from what is, from the whole experience of awakening, of enlightenment, is a reunification, is the barriers fall down and you become, and you return home. You go home and you become one with what is. That's what enlightenment is. And we're not in that state because we are in this, I'm here, the world is there, I'm separate, I'm lonely. This is where loneliness comes from. And us Western people get profoundly lonely. We experience that big time, us people. And it's a horrible, horrible experience. But we get it big time. And we have to therefore look at why we are in this state of conflict that we are. And we project our conflict. Our conflict is not only with ourselves, but then it's conflict with other people. So we, and this is all part of the deception of the whole thing, that we create other people in our minds and our lives, and then we get in conflict with them. And I'm in conflict with this person. But what you have to grow and get to know, and to see the truth of that is that person is a projection. What you're really in conflict with is not that person there, but you're in conflict with yourself. So you have the conflict, which is obvious, I don't like myself, but then it's your relationship with the rest of the world and how you don't like XYZ. In fact, XYZ, you are XYZ. So you're actually just shifting your conflict from here to there, but you are still the one who suffers, you are the one who creates, and you are the one who's caught up with that. And so so much of this comes down, so much of our focus needs to be on learning to like ourselves, learning to let go of the habitual habits that we've grown into of buying into the conflict, of feeding the conflict, of becoming the victim of the conflict and fighting and running away and not liking, all of those things. We have to learn to heal. This whole exotic, inconceivable path that so many of us think that it is nothing more than a healing process. That's all it is. But it's a dharmic healing. It's not one where you fiddle and you manipulate. It's that you have to learn how the healing, how the dharmic healing process works, which is not necessarily how it works in a worldly context. That's something to do. There's a duality that's going on, a manipulating, a rationalizing, understanding, blah, 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 all existing in the world of duality. The way that we learn to heal ourselves dharmically, and when we heal ourselves dharmically, it then becomes something forever, not something temporary, but something becomes permanent, is that we learn not to continue with that conflict, which is easily said, but what we're doing is that we're learning not to throw fuel on the fire. So that we learn to open up to ourselves, not avoid ourselves, but learn to open and see the conflict that we create for ourselves and the dislike that we have for ourselves, and learn to make friends. And the dharmic way of making friends is not to buy into the conflict, but to leave it alone with a mirror-like quality that sees it, that you wake up to these, to what you're doing to yourself. And rather than do something about it, you don't do anything. You don't go in and start doing things, but you learn to open and accept. You learn to open and see what you've done to yourself, and learn to not buy into that and perpetuate it, but learn to open to it and learn to bow into it and let the thing play itself out without feeding this world that you've learned to create for yourself, and to give this such strong focus, not to try and avoid it, not to try and sidestep it and think, well, if I can just skirt my way around this, then I won't have to, it's not something that I have to face, I don't have to look at. I can then sort of skirt round it and go for the Holy Grail, which is waiting for me over there. But it's learn to accept yourself, that this is the way it is. I mean, how I've got in this place, I don't know. And before I blame my mother and my father, it's all my mother's fault and all my father's fault. And as long as you don't own that reality, your reality there, as long as you're dumping it on somebody else, nothing will ever change. All you do is keep feeding it. It's your fault, it's your fault. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? As long as you don't own, and this is the whole nature of duality, is that we give things away, it's your fault, it's your fault. Is that you have to learn to own all of these experiences, learn to embrace them in a spirit of healing, not of being reactive, not of buying into the reactivity, the habit that you've got of defending yourself, of fighting and becoming the victim of yourself and just perpetuating that old thing. But a new spirit of openness, of embracing and of forgiving. You say, well, and allowing that thing to burn up. And the more that you can open and the more that you can become intimate and face and embrace, not give away, but embrace and become, get closer to these things, these habits that you've had all of your life that have just diminished you, made you the victim all of your life. The closer you can open and you, the more you can see the reality, what they're about, how they perpetuate, and to know the way beyond suffering there, is to allow them to play themselves out, no longer feed, no longer hang labels, like and dislike, hate, and bow your head into it and allow the thing a fire, because that's what it is. Allow the fire to slowly burn itself, and it's not easy. You learn to forgive yourself. You learn to not go there, not to keep fueling this thing, not to keep defending yourself, but to allow the thing to play itself out. That's the dharmic way is to do nothing, but you need the courage to face up, the courage to be with, to stay with, not to do anything, not to then, as you do, run away or hit or find a counter thing, so that you're always in this mode of defending, always this victim that's and it's all self, the whole thing, both sides of self. It isn't something attacking you. It's the self putting different hats on so that it can just perpetuate this conflict, perpetuate this duality. That's the heart of it. That's the heart of this business. Because once you make friends with yourself, once you learn to like yourself and reflect upon your qualities, because we have boundless goodness within all of us. Not something we create the nasty, we create the conflict and the negative. But that's something that is a creation. But what we all have is something that's beyond that, that we don't create, and that is the natural goodness that we all have, that we all live out of. Learn to tap it, learn to recognize it, see it, look for it. We've all got, this is what the paramitas are for. Look for those qualities. Tease them, evoke them to come up as an antidote to this stuff that you've so bought into. Learn to, so they become an antidote, so they take the place. Where there was once conflict, there is now something wholesome, something positive in its place. There's no room there for this. The space has been taken up. And because you haven't fed it, because you haven't thrown fuel on the fire, it's burnt itself out, or it's diminished to, it's only a little fire now. Before it was a, now it's, evoke the goodness. We've all got qualities. We all know we've got qualities. We all know we've got characteristics within us that are very human, that we do have an element of caring for each other, that we help, we do have concern for each other. We're not wholly a bad person. Nobody is wholly bad. And we need to turn the ship around. We need to recognize that we are the creator of our own suffering, that we are the creator. We don't like ourselves, and we are the creator of that experience. Not your mother and your father, your husband, your wife, your boss, all that out there. Disown it. No. If you want change, you have to own. And until you can own, you will not change. That's a simple principle. And the way the Dharma works is because you are prepared now to own everything that's inside of you. You embrace it. You open. You say, yes, this is the way I am. And you can apologize. I'm really sorry. I didn't know what I was doing. I just don't know what's going on. But now I'm now going to give all of this up. And bowing your head is a fantastic way of support, of helping you along through this very difficult journey, that you can, with your inner nature, hand that, but not hand it out there. You're still playing the game, giving it away, but handing it back into that part of you that's free and open, that wants to come and support you through these times of very great challenge and great difficulty. Open up to that part of you where the goodness is, where the humanness is, where the warmth and the love is. And all of this conflict that you have with yourself, hand it back into that part of you that has no conflict, that does love you, that is love. Make connection with that. And that's only gonna happen when you're prepared to open up to yourself and embrace yourself and own who you are. So it's there right in front of you. Not this, but this. There, and then learn dharmically how the dharmic skills, not the worldly skills, but the dharmic skills of opening and of embracing, of no longer fueling the fire, and of learning to evoke the human qualities that we've all got, all of us have got, whether we're prepared to, oh, I'm a bad person, I've got nothing good in me. Oh yes, you have, I'm sorry, actually. Actually, you're actually a good person. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. I want to be a bad person. I've always been a horrible person, and that's the way I am. No, it's not true, actually. That's a veneer. There's something not far beyond that that's wonderful. And we need to open those doors, open and allow it to come into our life by not fueling, by learning to accept that the way we are, this conflict. And that's the dharmic process anyway, east or west, because that's ultimately you learn to accept yourself, you learn to like yourself, you learn to love yourself. Not love narcissistically, but learn to love because you are something very special. And when you love yourself in a true way, in a way of wisdom, not in a way of self-view, but in a way of the truth of the thing is that we are something special, something unique. And when you see that, then all of this falls, all of this agitation, all the conflict falls away, and then you see what is your true nature. Then you become free. Then you become a true human being. That's the path for all of us. But for us Westerners, and this is what makes us different from the whole history of Buddhism, we've got one hell of an ego. We've got one hell of a sense of self. And therefore, I think if there is a difference, that's what we need to focus on, is that it's not different. We're not doing anything different. It's just that we are acknowledging that for us, the major issue on this path of liberation is that we have to learn to like ourselves, to get to know ourselves and get to like ourselves. And if there is a difference between the Eastern, I think this is it, and I think this is what, for us Western people, we don't have to tinker with anything. Is to put that as a priority without throwing the baby out. And if we can, I believe, if we can truly acknowledge that reality, the reality that we have as Western people, I think we're making massive, massive inroads on the path to freedom.